You guys ready? So we talked about, here, let me move this closer. Is that better? At the end of the last session, I posed a question, right? And that was, if I'm clear that I have an insanity, a strange mental condition, and that mental condition simply being that even though I know I don't want to continue to drink or live the way I'm living, yet I keep going back to that first drink, setting off that physical craving, where I continually lose control every time I go back, even though I really, really didn't want to continue to drink like that. The question was, what is it that sets up that condition conducive for that insanity to return? Right? Because obviously I don't live in the obsession. Right? I don't always have that. When I was drinking, it was regular, it was daily. Right, but what about if you've been hanging around this program for a few years? Right, what about the people around you that have time and all of a sudden you hear so and so's drinking? Right. Certainly, the book says that we recover from this hopeless state of mind and body. Right, but you know. But the fact is that we see it come back all the time. All right. Bye. So it would be really important to know what is it? What is it that sets up that situation? Now, when I first got to this program, the last thing I wanted to hear is what I heard, and that was people telling me that this is a spiritual program. You have a spiritual problem, right? And it's like, who could possibly understand? Who could possibly say that I have a spiritual problem? And how could there possibly be a spiritual solution when I don't even believe in God? Right? You know, and by this point in the first step is I certainly don't believe in God yet necessarily, but it's starting to chip away at that part of me that still wants to believe in me. Right? I believe less in me and my ability to do anything about this. If I'm clear on what my experience is with that mental condition, when that hits, I drink anyway. Right? Doing the same thing over and over again, knowing where it's going to take me. Knowing that I'm trapped in a situation that I can't do anything about. Right. And I start to look at that, the second half of step one, the unmanageability, on page 44, 45, and 52 in We Agnostics. And remember I said at the end of each section, it's going to summarize what we're supposed to know to this point, and then the next paragraph, it's going to summarize it again and just pose a consideration, some considerations. Let's actually go back to 43, because the last paragraph in the mental part says this. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Is that true for me? At certain times, do I have no effective mental defense against taking that first drink? That's like everything that leads me up to it, everything that comes before that first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. Nobody around me could stop me from drinking the way that I was drinking when the obsession was on me, right? Here's some people laughing. When the obsession is on you, right? You know, just if you're in between somebody, between the obsession and the drink, and you're trying to stand in the way of that, right? It says, his defense must come from a higher power. Right? The people around me could not fix me, could not save me. I could not save me. Meetings cannot keep me sober by themselves. You people, if the obsession, if the insanity hits me, right, I won't come back. Right? I've known people to get up in the middle of the meeting and just walk out and go drink. Right? I have to be clear that there is a mental condition that I can't do anything about. So I have to see what it's going to, you know, this second half of step one, which becomes really important in starting to help me see what is at the core of my problem. Right? So, we agnostics, page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. Right? And that can become a question after you've done the work up to this point. Have you learned something about your alcoholism? I certainly wasn't aware of the physical craving. I knew that I'd lost control once I started to drink. But the idea that I could never start drinking without losing control really wasn't something that I was clear on. It says that we hope that we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Right? If when you honestly want to and you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably an alcoholic. You know, I actually need both things here. When I honestly wanted to, I found that I couldn't quit entirely just by making the decision to quit. I would make the decision to not drink again, and I would drink again. Then I would renew that decision, and I would drink again. Right? And when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. Again, even if I drank every day, if I didn't lose control of what I was drinking, then it wouldn't have necessarily been a problem. You know, a couple glass of wines with dinner, a beer in front of the television. I don't know that that kind of drinking devastates people's lives, right? It was the result of that first drink. It says if those two things are there, if that be the case, if those two things are true, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Right? And at this point, it's just a theory, because here it's saying there's something else here that I'm not necessarily excited to hear about, because I don't really understand what a spiritual experience would look like or how to do that. How do you address a spiritual malady? To one who feels he's an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. An atheist is someone that doesn't believe. So obviously, that was true for me. I didn't believe that there was a God. So how could I believe in matters of the spirit or a spiritual condition that's, you know, because spiritual would be of God. Right, and an agnostic doesn't necessarily believe that there's a God that could work for them. May not agree. Let me rephrase that. An agnostic doesn't necessarily believe or disbelieve that there's a God, but doesn't believe certainly that one's working in their lives. Right, and it does call this chapter "We Agnostics," we who don't believe that this God will work in our lives. Right? To people like that, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Right? Wants to quit but cannot on my own. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Right? Although, if you would have asked me before I got, you know, in the beginning. Alcoholic death, spiritual basis of life. Bless you. Alcoholic death, spiritual basis of life. It's only an alcoholic that would try to figure out, which one do I want? Right? Continue drinking the way I'm drinking, or to find a spiritual way of life. Right. I found myself somewhere in the middle where I saw that to go on. Both of those situations seemed impossible. Right. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheist or agnostic. Or experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. So if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. He says we could wish to be moral. So the consideration here is, did you wish to be moral, to think and act right, to do the right things? I did. I always thought I had great morals. The trouble is, they were easily compromised because I did usually what was right for me. Right? So the fact was, I didn't really have the power to live up to my own set of morals. Right? Since we could wish to be philosophically comforted. Philosophically comforted would be to like to have a way of life, a vision of a way of life that you think you need to be comfortable in. Right? And I wanted that. I wished for that. A way of life that I would be comfortable in. I always believed that if I got the right education, that I would be able to get the right job and enough money to get the nice toys, the nice car, the good house, and all my stuff would attract her, right? And that if I only set up my life around me just right, then I'd be comfortable. Then everything would be okay. But what happens? We wish we had a better job. We wish we had more money. We wish we had a better car, a better girlfriend, a better house. Right? Always needed to take it a step farther because never really stayed comfortable enough. Right? Things would work temporarily, right? But just didn't go far enough. Right? It says, in fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Or human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. So my human resources, as guided by my mind, my will, were not sufficient to get the life or to hang on to the life that I thought I needed to be comfortable. And every time I developed something more or attracted more in my life that I thought I would need to be comfortable, it just didn't go deep enough for long enough. Right. It's 145, the first indented paragraph. It says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Now, a dilemma doesn't just mean problem. The definition of a dilemma is faced with alternatives that we don't necessarily like or want. Right. That is what makes it a dilemma. Right. All my choices, none of the choices I like and none of the choices I want. And when I saw that definition in the dictionary, I thought it was interesting that they used the word alternatives, because on the page before, it gave us two alternatives. Doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual life are not always alternatives to face. And that's really where I'm at this point. Lack of power, that was my dilemma, because I cannot go on the way I am, continuing to drink. and I really don't believe in this God thing, so a spiritual experience seems impossible. Right? So I'm in this middle. I don't want to go this way, and I don't want to go that way. I'm not doing this thing out of virtue. Right? I don't want to be godly or have a God in my life or to have a religion. Right? I just wanted to stop. I just wanted to enjoy my drinking, but I can't do that anymore because I see from the experience with what I've seen to this point is that chances are I'm probably never going to be a normal drinker based on my experience. It says we had to find a power by which we could live, right? And it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Now, if you notice in the book through this chapter, when they use a small p under the word power, it's usually my power or some power. But when they use a capital P, they're referring to something other than me. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than me. Obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? Right? So from here, I'd like to jump forward to page 52. In the middle of page 52, second indented paragraph, right, is what we affectionately call the bedevilments. Right? Bedevilment is like the things that haunt us. Right? To be bedeviled, right, by something. Right? To be haunted by things, by something. Since we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Right. So far, they've asked us to look at our alcoholism not by asking about our relationships with people necessarily, or if we ended up in jail, or hasn't talked a lot about our conditions at work. We've talked about things inside. We've looked at the alcoholism in our experience from inside, not what happened necessarily out here, but the idea that I have an obsession inside of me that takes me to a physical craving that's inside of my body. So where it says why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view as we did with the mental obsession and the physical craving. So it's going to ask us some important questions. It says we are having trouble with personal relationships. Right? Now, I can't necessarily just look at my current relationships here, because what I really need to do is realize is that I have problems inside with my personal relationships, right? That's the one thing that's been consistent in all of my relationships, is I'm in them, right? Right? It says we couldn't control our emotional natures. Now, this is different than controlling my emotions, right? Controlling my emotions would mean something like, I'm mad at you and I'm not going to let you know it. My emotional nature, though, is underneath that. It's like, I can't help being mad at you. I can't help being dissatisfied with you. I can't help feeling that I don't get enough from these relationships. They're not the right kind. I'm not getting what I need out of them, right? Something inside in my nature is just not content with what's going on around me, so my emotions, right, are what you might be what you see, but my emotional nature is what I feel, right? It's what's inside of me. And I can't control that. It says we are prey to misery and depression. Are you vulnerable to misery and depression? Right? You know, when you leave the drapes pulled and you're not answering the phone and you You know, you just don't want to talk to anybody. It says we couldn't make a living. Could you make a living satisfying enough to keep you happy or sober? Right? Another way to look at that is can I make a life satisfying enough to keep me happy or sober? It says we had a feeling of uselessness. Right? Certainly before I got into this program, before I got sober, I certainly didn't feel like I was useful in the world. Right? It says we were full of fear. Fear had always guided my actions. Fear always guided my behaviors in the world and my interactions. Right? Fear guides our existence. It says we were unhappy. I certainly was. Right? I certainly, before I got sober, in that last couple of years, you know, there was very little happiness in that. It says we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Right? You know, at that point, I was only concerned with what help I could get. I certainly didn't think I had anything for anybody else. Was not a basic solution for these bedevilments important to me? Right? Now, it encourages me to look at those things inside. You know, the things that come out as a result of these are the manifestations of this unmanageability, you know, the behavior that I exhibit with relationships outside, right? But what they're talking about is seeing that there's something inside of me. Now, it took me a while to understand this. And that was, these things are not the spiritual malady. These bedevilments are a result of a condition inside of me that is the spiritual malady, the spiritual disorder. Right? The spiritual malady I consider is transparent to my eye. Right? The malady itself. Just like, you know, what does God look like? Right? It can be transparent to you. And what I've come to understand is that these things are a result of or a reflection of that condition that's inside of me. If there's anybody that knows anything about art, or if you noticed art, if you see a picture of a mountain lake, right, and the way an artist will paint that lake, the water in the lake, is by painting the reflections of the mountains and the trees into the water. And that's how he presents what which is transparent looks like. So this page 52, this bedevilments, it becomes like the palette that I use to paint a picture of my spiritual condition. Right? So what I had to understand for me is that I have this spiritual disorder, and out of that spiritual disorder comes my problems with personal relationships, my inability to control my emotional natures, and the misery and depression, all the things that it says here. Out of that spiritual malady comes these things, and looking around my life at how these things look paints me a picture of my spiritual condition. Because if I can relate to these things right now, then at its core is a spiritual disorder. And I can't do anything about that on my own. All right? You know, they told me in the beginning that it was a spiritual program and that I had a spiritual disorder, but I never really could understand that. And piecing this all together, what I had to see was that from this spiritual disorder comes these bedevilments, these things that haunt my life, the way I interact with the world around me, my problems with relationships, my inability to control my emotions, this stuff that it says here, right? And it paints me a picture of my spiritual condition. And what I had to see is that step one actually works backwards, right? Because they presented it to me, the physical craving, mental obsession, unmanageability of my spirit. But really it works backwards. My spiritual malady sets up the condition conducive for the insanity to return. And time does not protect you from that. Right. Pardon me? Sure. My spiritual malady, the spiritual disorder deep down inside that I can't see. I can't see the malady itself, but what I see is the reflection of that malady in my life through looking at these things on page 52. And what I have to understand is the spiritual disorder sets up the condition conducive for the alcoholic insanity or the obsessions to drink, to come back. And then I drink again, and I lose control when I start. Right? For people with other problems besides alcohol, they'll see it come out differently. They'll see that the spiritual malady sets up a condition conducive for the obsessions of whatever their problem was. Right? And that's why it's the 12-step process can work for more than one, for all these other programs. Right? But at its core, I've got to see that there is this spiritual condition that I cannot do anything about. Right? And it's still a dilemma. Because I don't necessarily believe that there's a God that cares for me yet, at this point. I don't understand that. All I know is that I don't want to go back to drinking. Right? And I don't necessarily want to have faith in something that I can't see or feel or touch. Right? So it's still a dilemma, and I could go back and actually ask myself back on 45, can I see that lack of power is still my dilemma? And that I had to find some power by which I could live. And it certainly has to be a power greater than myself. That's obvious. But how and where am I going to find this power? Right. So the experience of step one is not that you can't drink. The experience of step one for me was that I will drink again if I don't get something more. Right. That I needed to find something. I needed to find something here that would work. Right. And after step one, I certainly, as I said, I don't understand how this God thing is going to work, but I also don't understand where this power is going to come from. Right? But if I've had a deep and effective first step experience, I've got to be at least open to the idea that there better be something or I'm screwed. Right? So I use the same chapter, We Agnostics, to look at step two. And with step two, what I have to see is that it says, we agnostics, not we believers. So I don't go, even though it's going to mention God through this chapter, I try not to look at it from necessarily how much I already believe in God, or how much I, but let me just say it like this. People come to this thing from different places. Some people come to this thing with an immense amount of knowledge about what God is and a strong belief in what God is, right? Some of you have that. When you walked in the door, you had a lot of religious training. You could talk about God probably better than I could, right? On the other hand, I absolutely wanted nothing to do with God. I mean, the way I grew up is there was a lot of physical violence in my house, right? And mainly between my parents with each other. And I remember being 6 years old and sitting and laying in bed after, you know, actually it was about probably after t- times like this when there was a lot of things going on that were religious things, because I lived in England. I grew up in England between the ages of 5 and 9, and they would march everybody to the schools. I'd march everybody from school into the churches around the school and make us learn hymns and prayers for the holiday season. And I remember coming home and laying in bed and thinking, maybe if I prayed and asked God to stop my parents from fighting, that they'd just get along. Right? But God didn't listen. Right? Not to me, at least. Right? Because they kept fighting and they ended up separating. And I had plenty of experiences where I thought that just God obviously doesn't care about what I want, if there is one even there. And growing up, just, you know, there was just no proof for me, and I wanted some proof. I wanted something that gave me a sign that there was something else there. Because obviously, looking back, I see that there, not believing in there being something there can actually be a lonely place, especially when things aren't quite going right in your world, right? Life can be a lonely place. So there's certainly, I sense that there was that I wished that there was something there, but obviously it didn't. What if there was something, it didn't care about my life. So I came to this thing completely not believing. So what's easier, coming to this thing not believing, or coming to this thing with an understanding and a definition and a lot of information about what God is? I think that there's a common ground here. There's a common place where both those people come together, and that is in their agnosticism. Because you could believe in and have a knowledge of a knowledge of your religion and still not rely on that power. So the word reliance comes into this a lot through this chapter with me. Right? Do I rely on that which I can define to you and talk for hours on? Do you rely on that in your life? Right? I mean, because I don't believe, then it's easy to say I don't rely on anything but myself. So it's a little harder for someone that has all this information to come to the realization that yes, I believe, but I don't rely on God. And isn't that a sign that deep down, right, you don't rely on God because you don't really think God will work? Right? It says, where and how are we to find this power? It says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. The main object of this book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So, obviously, I grew up with a lot of ideas about what this God thing was supposed to look like and why it shouldn't work. I had a lot of prejudgments of what it was supposed to look like and what I wasn't getting. And it was easy to look down at people that believed, right? Call them weak, having to believe in something other than themselves. Picking apart people that said that they had some kind of spiritual belief system and say, well, how could they be spiritual if they smoke? Or how could they have a God in their life if they're gonna behave like that? Right? It was just too hard for me to go along with that idea. Except I had to get to the place where I need to be at least open, and that's kind of another place where the set-aside prayer has to come into play. God, please set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Because right now what we're looking at here is not all of these other things in the world that I've seen God, where God can't work. That if I could set aside all of my arguments against where I believe God can't work and just look at what's in front of me. Right? I have this spiritual malady that I can't do anything about, and if something doesn't get addressed with that or in that direction, those obsessions can return and I'll drink again. Because that's what we're really looking at here. Am I willing to believe that there's a power that can move me beyond where I am, right? That can move me beyond where I've been able to help myself, right? So all of my arguments against God had to at least be just set aside, right? On SIP 46, it says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, wasn't sufficient to make the approach and to effect contact with him. Right. That was something I really liked hearing, is because I didn't know if you guys were going to be turn out to be some kind of cult and you were going to impose some kind of religious doctrine on me. It was something I absolutely didn't want. When people talked about finding your own conception of God, right, that certainly was attractive to me. I was a little confused by the conceptions you were telling me were okay, though, because where I live, what they were telling people that were new, it's as if you can't believe in God, just believe in a tree. Or if you can't believe in God, believe in a wave, because you can't stop a wave. Or it's like, I mean, I didn't like the idea of God, but I certainly knew a tree wouldn't be able to keep me sober. Right? Right. But the idea that my own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. The way I explain that is I had this much faith that enough money would be my solution. If I only win the lottery, then everything would be okay. Then I could buy the house and attract the girl and live comfortably. You know, and I had that much faith that the right setting up the right stuff around me would take me to that way of life that was comfortable, and if it was the right woman, right, then I'd be okay. And just somewhere deep down inside, there was the little idea in the back of my mind that, and it was as simple as if there was a power that could work in my life, maybe that, and that you guys weren't just saying that, you know, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. Because if I can set aside my prejudices against that idea, right, and think honestly about it, right, honestly being that it certainly is something that I needed, more power. You know, and you certainly hear enough talked about God, right? And, you know, it just really was hard because I couldn't see how that could possibly work for me because it never had, right? On 47, in the middle of the page, it says, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? Am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? I certainly was hoping so. Right? And as soon as a man can say that he does believe or is even just willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that it is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. See, just being even willing to believe was a big step for me. And what made me willing to believe? Alcohol. The truth about my drinking. Right? So what I have to see, again, and I've said it before, is that it's to the degree that I'm clear on the hopelessness of my alcoholic condition, right, is the degree that I'm going to move forward here in being willing to be open to there being a power that has to work in my life. It says, it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. A cornerstone in a building is like the first stone in place. Right? On page 17, it talked about the powerful cement which binds us, being a combination of our common problem and our common solution. That's the powerful cement which binds us, right? And we're starting to build this spiritual structure, right? And the first stone in place on this spiritual structure is this cornerstone of just a willingness to believe, right? That's all it takes from this point, at this point here. And it's, I thought I had to get to the place where I could explain to you what God is before I could start to use God, right? But that isn't what it's saying here. Just a simple willingness to believe, to be open to Him. It says, that was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. Right? So, I said I was willing at this point, but I still felt like I had to have proof to really believe. I didn't know where this was going to take me. I didn't know how I could possibly ever really, really believe like some people talked like they believed. But going through this paragraph and turning the statements into questions and asking, can I see what I actually relied on here? You know, there's a lot of different belief systems in the world. A lot of people look at God in different ways, but what they all have in common is that which they rely on, they call God. Right? What I saw here, going through this chapter, and how I was only relying on myself, that means I was God. Not by what I said. I wouldn't say I'm God, right? Not unless I, you know, thought it was going to be funny. But if you look at how you've lived and how you've only relied on yourself, haven't you really made yourself that power? Right? And that's even for those people that have a strong understanding or belief system of their religion. Right? If you keep turning to yourself for the ultimate power for all of your situations, then you're relying on yourself as that power which is going to move you through life. How good a job has it done so far? Right? Right? Because at this point, you know, I've just seen the truth about step one and I can't stop drinking. So, besides the seemingly inability to accept much on faith, this is top of 48 now, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinance, sensitivity, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. That was me. All right. If you came up to me and started to talk to me about God, it would just piss me off. All right. Bristling with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned, obviously, right? That's not really conducive to a spiritual path. Right? Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. So faced with alcoholic destruction. Right. Pain can be a great motivator here in moving me towards the right direction. Right. So as painful as it was to suffer the alcoholic consequences in my life, it moved me this direction. And I wouldn't have come this direction if it wasn't for the for that pain that it caused me. So in some senses, alcohol brought me to this God, to this place. It says it finally beat us. Oh, I'm sorry. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness, and sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. The reader may still be asking why he should believe in a power greater than himself. See that capital P again? We think there are good reasons. Let us have a look at some of them. A practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Are you a stickler for facts and results? I am. Yeah. Show me the proof. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts theories of all kinds, provided they're firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this readily acceptance? Simply because it's impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. So, you believe in electricity, right? You know that if you flip that switch over there on the wall, some of these lights will come on, right? Do you know how that works? Can you explain how that works? Right? But you accept things that you see and because you see results, right? That's not hard that's not much to ask for. I know that if I flip that switch on, this light will come on. There's proof, right? Then it goes on to say nowadays, everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions which are good evidence, but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It's being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. To illustrate, the prosaic, meaning plain ordinary, the plain ordinary steel girder is a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speed. Right? You learned that in school, didn't you? These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Science tells us so, right? We have no reason to doubt it. You know, when they wrote this book in the 1930s, they hadn't developed the atomic microscope yet, and they hadn't seen this. Scientists were telling you that this was what was going on, and they hadn't seen it yet. And you were believing them. Right? So where's the difference here? Is I know if I slip that switch on and the light will come on, there's proof. You don't know how that works. Yet these people are going to tell you about these little tiny things that you can't see, that this is made up of, the little tiny atoms and things whirling around at incredible speed at an atomic level, or right? And you're just willing to accept it without any question. So why is it different with this God thing when people all over the world tell you that this relationship with this power has changed their life? Right, all of a sudden you want to say, no, how could that be? Right? It says, we have no reason to doubt it. However, the perfect logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there's an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence. And right there, our perverse streak comes to the surface. And we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. Right? And I can really relate to laboriously setting out to convince everybody that it's not true, there is no God. How can there be a God with wars and sickness and all these things that are going on in the world? How could there be a God? Right? You know, but where does that really get me in this place? Here, I see face to face with alcoholic destruction that I need power. And if there is nothing there, then what's left for me? Right? So again, I have to have to look at the idea that, am I willing to believe that there is something? Right? And just be willing to believe. Not that I believe in or understand how to explain it yet, but just to separate myself from all of my arguments against why there shouldn't be or why there can't be something there. And again, for the people that are new, is we're not telling you what that is for you. We're just telling you that you're not it. Right? So, on 50 it says, on the one proposition, however, these men and women strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than themselves. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. So, see. On the bottom of 51, it says, we asked ourselves this, are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? You know, in the old days, years and years ago, things of the spirit, you know, religion was more important than science. They believed more in the idea of there being a gods than there was in other scientific matters. All right, uses the examples here of like Columbus thinking that the earth is really round, right? Or Galileo's ideas about astronomy, how he was nearly put to death because of his ideas that the Earth actually I believe that he was thinking that the planets revolved around the Earth, but you know, but he was nearly put to death for his scientific ideas. Back then, they believed more in spiritual explanations for this stuff. So, what it's asking here is, we ask ourselves this, are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? Right? Today, most of us, right, will stand up for the scientific explanation more than the spiritual explanation. Right? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds had proven man could never fly? So when they saw the Wright brothers fly, they didn't print it. Because it can't be true. Right? Had not people said that God had restored this privilege to the birds, and only 30 years later the conquest of the air was almost an old story, and airplane travel was in full swing? Right? So we get locked in this idea, right, that, you know, that was supported through my lifetime, that God cannot work in my life. Right? And we looked at page 52 here already, but what I'm going to do now is I'm going to jump ahead to the next page, on page 53, because I want to talk about this. The middle of the page where it says, when we became alcoholics, when I really saw the truth about step one, that there's nothing stopping me from drinking again, crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we could not postpone or evade, we had to fairly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he's nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? And when I'm working with someone, there's an exercise that I give them at this point. And also, I want to back up just a little bit and explain this. That either when it says that either God is everything, either God is everything or else he is nothing, I look at that, either God is everything or I'm everything. Right? Either God is all there is or I'm all there is. Right? What is my choice to be? Either I'm the power or God is the power. So now, page 52 has become really useful. I look at it in the first step, I look at it in the second step, I look at it in the third step, and again I'll come back to it in the 11th step. But here in the second step, I turn it into a contemplation. And when I am working with someone, I send them home with that question, what is your choice to be? First we look at the idea of what if God is nothing? Right? What if that little voice in the back of your mind that says there is no God is true? What if it's right? And all you people are full of it. Right? You talk about God, but there really is nothing. Right? I mean, you want to believe, but there's that little voice in the back that says, how could that work? How could that be? So what I do is I say, let's work with that a little bit. Let's consider, what if there is no God? Right? And I send them home with this contemplation. What if there is no God? And I have them read page 52 and consider it in like a meditation. I tell them, stop praying. And if they have to pray, say, pray to themselves. Right? And I get a lot of resistance. People get scared of it. Right? And it's like, you know, God's not going to strike you dead for trying to understand him better. Believe me. Right. What if that little voice in the back of your mind that says there is no God is true, and there is no power for you than what you've ever operated on your own? And when it comes to problems with personal relationships, right, there won't be anything more for you than what you've ever had. No more in your life than what you've ever experienced move you through those relationships, love relationships, family, friends, work relationships. What if there's nothing more for you than what you have, what you've ever had in the past on your own power? What if there is no God and that little voice in the back of your head is true when it says it's just about you and what you can manage in your life when you are out of control with your emotional natures? Right, the place where you see the insanity come up and you can't do anything about it on your own because you know you're driven by something deep down inside that's just pissing you off or upsetting you. Right? You can't get out of that depression or the negative thinking or the, you know, whatever that emotional situation is. Since we were prey to misery and depression, what if there is nothing and you are alone? Because that's really what sitting in misery and depression feels like, is sitting alone by yourself, right, with no help, with nothing that will save you. And what if that's true? There is nothing that will pull you out of that. Couldn't make a living. Couldn't make a life that was satisfying. Right? What if in my life there is no more power for me than what I've ever depended on or relied on in my own power or of my own power? And there's nothing more for me than that. What if that's true? I had a feeling of uselessness. Right? What if there is no way I could be useful or feel useful in the world? Since we were full of fear, what if I really am alone with that fear, and fear will continue to drive my life, right? And there is no power that will move me beyond this. And what they say in those meetings is that we're still powerlessness is true. You know, I've heard it all the time, as people talking about still being powerless. Right? That means I'm going to continue to be driven by fear. We were unhappy. Couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. What if there really is nothing more for you than what you have, what you came in with? Right? Kind of depressing, isn't it? And I ask the people I work with to sit with that for a few days, contemplate what that means in their life, to live with no power, to live just with whatever it is that they've been living on up to this point on their own. Right? And you get varied reactions to that. But then there's another part of the exercise, and that is the second part here, where it says, what if God is everything? What if there is a God? What if there is a power that will work in my life? What if there is a power that could work in my life, that could move me beyond the places where my power falls short of? What if I had access to more power in relationships? Right? What if I could access more power that I could channel through my emotional natures? What if I had more power, something I could turn to when I'm in misery or depression, or in feelings of uselessness or fear and unhappiness or in my life, or can't seem to be of real help to other people? Right? Contemplate those things with more power than I've ever had. What would that look like? Right? Now I make a choice. Living without power, or being willing to believe that there's more power for me. Right. I like what it says after this. It says, arrived at this point, we are squarely confronted with the question of faith. Right? Squarely confronted with the question of faith, because if I'm not willing to have it, that means a life of living life just in the power that I've been operating on up to this point. If I'm willing to have faith that there's more for me, right, that means a life of more power than I've ever had. Let's see how our time is, okay. Stop? Yeah. Oh, it did, didn't it? It's 10 to... Yeah. The clock. I don't think the clock liked the exercise. Yeah.
It's thinking about no God.
Lack of power, that was the clock's dilemma. Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted about with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason towards the desired shore of faith. The outlines of this promised land, the outlines of the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason, notice that reason is capitalized. Reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose or support. So have you been leaning heavily on your reason? Hasn't that been what you've been dependent on more than anything? And that was natural. But let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? Did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Didn't you have faith in yourself? Right? We had been faithful abjectly to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. Just the word faith bothered me. Right? But here it's showing me that that's what I've lived by, faith. but in myself. We found, too, that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. That was another word I hated, right? Worshippers. But look at what it says. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, ourselves, and then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset or the sea or a flower? Who had not loved something or somebody? So I see my whole life has been full of faith in myself and worship of money, things, people, ideas, right? So I'd certainly have to see that I have the ability for faith and I have the ability for worship, right? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw it last. Especially when you look at how much reason was it in depending on that which was not giving us enough in our lives, right? I believed in myself. I had faith in myself. I had faith in people. Yet I continually fell short of giving me what I needed to survive, right? I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't find the life that I needed or that I thought would put me in a place of comfort, right? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Right? So I'm going to drop to the bottom of the page where it says, hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. Though it emanates from our mind at our best. I'm sorry, or from our best minds. What about people who prove that man could never fly? Right? They hung on to that for a long time, didn't they? You know, I remember thinking I was on the flight out here. There's this 1,000 people being hurled across the sky in this metal tube, right? It was like, you know, just the thought of it is so hard to comprehend, right? But there I was. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems, they said God made these things possible and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. You know, I walked into this program completely hopeless, thinking that nothing was going to save me from the life, from the existence that I was living. Right? And you guys told me that there is a power, that there's a way of life that will change all that. Right? And you told me it was God, and I wanted to, I was sure that I was going to have to figure out another way. Right? But I didn't. Right? When I really saw step one, I had to see that there really was no other way for me. Right? I needed more power. Goes on to say, actually we were fooling ourselves. This is on page 55. Actually we were fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. I didn't know that I believed in God, but deep down inside, it certainly didn't sound bad for there to be some source of power that would help me. It says it may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, which is ego, by worship of other things, but in some form or another it was there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. Right? This whole spiritual thing is new to me, but it's not new. Right? It's been around since the beginning of time. Right? Probably on, you know, cave paintings, right? Right? This is not new. It's just new to me. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. So, here's coming up now is the place in the book where it's going to tell me exactly how we find God. And it's also going to tell me exactly where we find God. Right? And it's that third indented paragraph down around the middle of the paragraph. It says, sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. All right? Now, if you turn a couple pages ahead to 59, read the fourth step. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We have to search fearlessly. Right? But he was there. And here is exactly where we're going to find God. It says he was as much a fact as we were. It says we found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, the last place I looked, it's only there that he may be found. It was so with us. That's a promise. So with us. They found the great reality deep down inside themselves. And that was really moving for me to read that, because I always thought that this thing was going to be out here. Right? The idea that what I'm looking for is in here, right? It just made me realize that I'm not going to have to talk too loud for it to hear me. You know, here's some important parts of this that I'd like to bring up, and it's on the next paragraph where it says we can only clear the ground a bit. But this is what I have to be willing to do and believe that I have to do. That if their testimony has helped sweep away prejudice, enabled me to think honestly and encouraged me to search diligently within myself, then I can find God. It says, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. It says, with this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come. Right? So, key words here is being willing to sweep away prejudice. To think honestly, and being encouraged to search diligently within myself to find that power. Goes on to talk about a story about a guy on 56 where it says our friend was a minister's son. Talks about his spiritual experience. He attended church school where he became rebellious at what he thought an overdose of religion, of religious education, sorry. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. And one night when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. And that was like my war cry. If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. Why should I believe that there's really something here? But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question. Is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? All right. And while pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came and it crowded out all else. All right. All these people around me say that in meetings and all around, you know, all people all around the world that say that the most important thing in their life is this relationship with God. And here I am, can't stay sober, trashed my life, trashed everything important to me, and my dreams were shattered, and I'm, you know, want to resist what they're saying here, thinking that I'm going to fix something. And here, when I read this statement, it just really moved me. Who am I to say there is no God in a world that shows me there is? Right? Who am I to say there is no God in a world that shows me there is? Right? My personal experience was I had a room full of people in my home group who had gone through this process, who said, at the end of this process is power and freedom. Right? And nothing less for me if I do what they did. Right? And I had no reason to doubt them or not to trust them. I'm going to end there for another break. And what I had to just see from this place is that I need to just be open to come to believe that there better be a power greater than myself that will restore me to humanity. Thank you.